Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and once again, I want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life to join me today on the broadcast. Today is officially Labor Day for all of us who've had to work nonstop. This is an official recognized day of rest. I hope all of us will take advantage of it. It is Monday, September 6th, 2021. Today on The Cross in the Desert, I want to turn my attention right back to where my heart and soul is at, and that is being a voice for the Iranian people. I like to be a voice of hope and freedom because of the oppression and the suffering that they endure on a daily basis. And just this past weekend, I came across a story that is the lead story in today's broadcast. I wish it wasn't a lead story. I wish I didn't have to talk about it at all. But it is another example of the brutality and the long war against women in Iran. It's talking about an honor killing. And let me just pause and say this. The Texas heartbeat law has caused quite a stir among the women, the feminists of America. But I'd like to point out this. The real war against women, the real war against women is in Iran, Saudi Arabia, Afghanistan. It's not in Texas. You understand? The real long war against women is in these countries, these Muslim-majority countries. The lead story today is a very, very sad one. And it's written by a journalist for Blitz. The Mullah regime in Iran kills child bride. Notice it's a child bride, someone married off way too soon. But you can do that in Iran, 13, 14, 15 years old, a child bride, was killed by a family member just this past August 30th in Lorestan, western Iran. And here's the first thing you need to know. This is an honor killing, which means that this child bride had done something to dishonor or disgrace her family. And according to the regime laws in Iran, those who commit honor killings, usually a family member, are exempt from lengthy sentences. Now, the age of this person is a little disputed. First, she's 14, then she's 16. I guess the main thing is that she's a person. Her name was Mobina Suri. She was recently married to a young clergy. And there had been rumors about her and another boy. And the locals said that family members of Mobina's husband killed her out of suspicion and bigotry. Well, don't you know, Surah chapter 4, verse 34 is an indictment against women in the Quran. If a husband suspects, even suspects, that his wife has been unfaithful to her, he is to punish her. Number one, not sleep with her, confront her, and finally beat her. Surah chapter 4. So this is all in accordance with not just tradition. Lots of people want to say, well, this is just tradition. No, this is the teaching of the Quran. It says beat her. In this case, they took it a step further, and they killed her. Someone had told Mobina's father that a person had entered their home in the middle of the night. Notice someone just said that. Mobina's husband was home, so that couldn't be true. He would have known. And the rumors caused this little girl's uncles and brother and her husband and father to plan her murder. So they had a suspicion based on rumors, and they planned it. What did they do to this girl? They suffocated her with her own headscarf and later said that she had committed suicide. So they lied. They say one of Mobina's family members killed her, and that's why her family did not press charges. So the police has detained Mobina's husband, by the way, who was also her cousin, and he's been detained. The body of 16-year-old Mobina was found in a garden. Her husband was arrested on murder charges, although, of course, he denies it and says, well, she committed suicide. That's the story. Now, in another report, the governor of Rumshkan is saying that Mobina's husband confessed to the murder, and that the eight other family members were also arrested but were released after the confession. Child brides, by the way, are victims of honor killings due to forced marriages carried out while they have not reached mental maturity. Women are punished for, quote-unquote, disgrace caused to their families. Those who perform honor killings are given, now listen, less than 10 years of prison time. Less. Now, back just a year ago in August 2020, I reported on this story. It's part of my podcast. Romina Ashfari was killed in her sleep by her father. She was beheaded. Her father was only given 9 years of prison time. This is while heavier prison terms are handed out to political prisoners and religious minorities. They get more. Now, the Iranian regime encourages child marriages, and Iran's parliament has refused to approve the child spouse bill, which would amend current laws that allow families to force their children, mostly girls, into marriage. It would do something about the age, but it's been refused. The bill was introduced back to parliament in 2016, and it proposes an absolute ban on the marriage of girls under 13 and an absolute ban on the marriage of boys under 16. For the marriage of girls between 13 and 16 and for boys between ages 16 and 18, the bill would require parental consent and court permission. Marriage for girls over 16 and for boys over 18 would require no court permission. This is a tragedy. This honor killing was all set into motion over child brides. And I want to talk to us about that this morning, this abusive law in Iran, which, by the way, here in the United States, I have a very, very good friend, Naila Amin, who has done so much important work in many, many states, recently in New York. Right before Governor Cuomo resigned, he signed a bill stopping child marriage in Iran. You have to be above the age of 18 to get married. And so Naila, my good friend from Pakistan, she's formerly from Pakistan, she also was kind of an arranged marriage child bride victim at one time. She has done incredible work in getting these laws passed to stop child marriage. Thank God for Naila. But here in Iran, there is no Nilas to relegate this. I want to talk to us a little bit this morning about this. It's an article from the Center for Human Rights in Iran and the story of the life of an Iranian child bride. There's also some animation. It's a short movie clip about this horrible domestic law. By the age of 11, Rahal had already 7 children. Married off to a man 5 times her age, she was in poor health when her situation was accidentally discovered in the Iranian city of Ilham by a charity that was later disbanded by the government. Her story made headlines throughout the country, yet tens of thousands of girls continue to be legally married off every year in Iran, where girls can be married at age 13. Younger with the permission of the father or male guardian and a judge, and boys can be married at age 15. The government even provides low-cost, get this, marriage loans that have resulted in a surge in the life-threatening practicing of this law. Registered marriages of girls aged between 10 to 14 years has increased by 10.5% in the country in 2020. That's compared to 2019. 1,346 babies were born from mothers during this time under the age of 15. Now, just keep in mind, Raha, at age 11, has already had 7 children. The numbers cited in the report cover only registered marriage, which means they are excluding the unregistered marriage, a common practice in rural and remote locations in Iran, where the act of child marriage is also more common. Child brides are subjected to severe mental and physical abuse with no means of protecting themselves. And despite there is broad societal condemnation of this practice, all attempts to raise the marriage age in Iran have been blocked by hardline officials. It is such a sad travesty. In my book, Shout Freedom, The Desperate Cry of Iranians, a friend of mine, Hussein Ahmadinejad, who lives in the Netherlands, he's a human rights activist, he's an Iranian, he contributed an article to the book, and I want to read this to you because it's very well written. He says, imagine a young 9-year-old girl forced to abandon her favorite dolls, and instead of having fun with her friends at the playground, she is thrust into the enormous responsibility of becoming a wife to a man 3 times her age. This shocking reality becomes a real nightmare for innocent girls in Iran and also mainly third world countries. The United Nations reports that if the current trend of forced marriages for little girls continues, the number of those forced to form a family before the legal age in 2050 will be around 1 billion and 200 million. Further statistics reveal that currently there are over 700 million girls who are forced to marry before the legal age all over the world. Studies show that in such countries like India, Afghanistan, Yemen, Nigeria, and Somalia, 10-year-old girls are forced into arranged marriages, 10 years old. In Iran, back in 2015, the number of child marriages had increased by more than 10,000. Currently, there are more than 43,000 marriages of 10 to 15-year-old girls, of which 2,000 of those marriages have either ended in divorce or death. And now Bobina tops out the statistic. What these statistics reveal is a painful reality in the Iranian culture. Young girls are being snatched from the cradle without experiencing a normal childhood. They're becoming victims to a religious system that robs them of their innocence. Tradition, religious beliefs, and social abnormalities creates an environment for this social evil to thrive. The age of puberty and the age of marriageability has been blurred by the Iranian legal system. According to Sharia law, Article 1041, 13-year-old girls and 15-year-old boys are permitted to marry. And if the father considers it appropriate for the daughter to marry under the age of 13, the court will allow this frightening exception. The purpose of societal law is to regulate marriage. Marriage is a formal contract between a man and a woman requiring a healthy sense of the will. The young girl must possess the necessary physical and psychological skills to raise this child. This requires a development which a young 13-year-old girl does not possess because of the religious traditions imposed on her. She has no choice. Child marriage in Iran is really a social and cultural disaster that leaves deep scars on innocent young girls for a lifetime. Unfortunately, there is insufficient enforcement in society to prevent this abuse from happening. The trauma of growing up too soon and suffering abuse from older men will torment these children the rest of their lives. It is a pain that will never leave them. I'm reading to you from my book, Shout Freedom, The Desperate Cry of Iranians, that my good friend Manoush Bakhtiari and I wrote together. It's an article entitled The Suffering Bride, The Marriage of Children in Iran, written by Hussein Ahmadinejad. And I point this out because Mobina would still be alive today. Romina would still be alive today if it wasn't for this legal, desperately deadly law in Iran that puts child brides out as targets for abuse, for rape, for murder, for honor killing. It is so very sad. But you see, this goes back to life for women in Iran. This goes back to what I said originally, the real war on women is in Afghanistan, in Iran, not in Texas. I wish I could say this enough time that women would understand. They refuse to raise a voice in support of these child brides. They refuse to stand up and condemn this act of child brides in Iran. And yet they complain about their lack of rights here in the United States. I want to talk about a very significant blog that I wrote several years ago that applies directly to what we're talking about this morning. I have been a voice for Iranian women for more now than 10 years. And many years ago, I had a story I shared in my books that was shared to me by my good friend living in Iran. And it's so sad that I have to share that. Her name is Atafi. She lives with her husband in Tehran. They want to migrate so much. It's money. It's their biggest problem. Several years ago, I was on a bank run. I was depositing money from Family Christian Bookstore into Bank of America. It's my usual custom. I do this every morning. And as I was walking inside the bank, my cell phone had a notification on it, and it was from my friend Atafi. She says, "You will not believe what is happening." Well, here is her story, and it's so sad because it's about the women of Iran. One of the traditions of my Iranian friends as they prepare for Nowruz, the Persian New Year, is shopping for new clothes. It's a big tradition. Spring is just around the corner, and it's time for new beginnings. And one of those new beginnings for my friends is expanding their wardrobe. My friend Atafi had left home that morning. She wanted to go shopping at a local clothing store. And she's browsing around in the clothing store. And then she notices Iranian security officers confronting the store owner. There's loud back and forth shouting going on. So she kind of just stays away from it. She doesn't want to get involved in it. But she watches carefully what's going on. And later on, she discovered that the security officers in this clothing store had just found out that the store owner was in violation of the Islamic dress code. Well, she was wearing her hijab. What are they talking about? Well, guess what? She was in violation of the Islamic dress code. The store owner had failed to put hijabs on all of the mannequins, and she had to do it right now or be arrested. My friend Atafi, she goes, "This is insane. These are mannequins. But you know, it doesn't matter in Iran. You know, it's Islamic law for all women to wear a veil when they go out publicly, right? We understand that. If they fail to comply, they can be fined, arrested, lashed. But wait a minute. Is there not a distinction between human beings and mannequins? Well, what is a mannequin? A mannequin is a lifeless form of plastic representing a human being, and it's used to display the latest fashion in store windows. Oh, I get it now. The Islamic regime would prefer that all Iranians behave just like mannequins. Mannequins don't speak, or talk back, or protest, or whine, or complain. These lifeless plastic forms wear whatever you put on them without a complaint, and they stand in the window all day. It seems that image is everything, according to Iranian law. Iranians are supposed to obey without complaint and wear whatever they are told, you know, just like the mannequins in the store window. You know, the sad reality to this image is everything scenario is that it reduces real human beings to lifeless forms without hearts, without soul. But human beings cannot exist under these conditions. They quickly lose all self-worth and self-esteem, and that's exactly what false religion does. It robs people of all meaning and all purpose in life and reduces them to little more than puppets on a string. But God didn't create us as lifeless forms or puppets on a string. He created you and me with great value. He gave us a heart to discover the beauty of life that surrounds us. He breathed into our souls love, purpose, and creativity to shine like the brilliant colors of the rainbow and to make a difference in a world of suffering and pain. Our lives will never shine very brightly if we are reduced to the morbid and depressing existence of mannequins in a store window. Well, but everything is image. Image is everything, right? I want to tell you, God offers true hope and healing for Iranian women, for Afghan women, for Saudi women, for Nigerian women, for all the women in the world that are suffering oppressively under these kind of regimes. The Bible teaches us that God hears the cry of the oppressed, and he rescues them. I really believe, as a voice, as a human rights activist, that one day in the future, I wish it was sooner, that my Iranian friends will be able to walk down the streets of Tehran without the fear of being arrested. I believe that because I believe in a God of justice. I believe that God is going to bring justice and freedom to the women of Iran very soon. And I can say this with confidence because the Bible teaches that God is a God of justice. How do I know that? One precious psalm that encourages me that God will keep his promise and free these women and restore dignity to them is a psalm that is the lifeblood of my prayer life. It's Psalm 72, verses 12 through 14. I want you to hear this morning. And this is speaking of the promises of God. The writer says he will rescue the poor when they cry to him. He will help the oppressed who have no one to defend them. He feels pity for the weak and the needy, and he will rescue them. He will redeem them from oppression and violence, for their lives are precious to him. These are not just mere words on a page. These are promises that the God of justice says he will do. He will hear their prayers. He will defend them. He understands their pain and suffering. He will redeem them from prejudice and violence because their lives are precious to him. And it's a wonderful promise from God's holy word. God understands their pain. Why? How can he know? Because in Christ, in Jesus, he became a human being. He suffered excruciating pain, dying on the cross. He understands us. He did that in order to save us from our sins. Jesus was spit upon, mocked, insulted, and betrayed. He understands everything they're going through because he experienced all of them. The women of the Middle East are leaving Islam every day because they have found a God who understands their pain and suffering. Jesus is that God. He is not some distant deity far away, disconnected from our pain, but a God who is both our strength and our refuge and our ever-present help in time of need. This is a promise from the God of the Bible. It is a true and living promise that we can depend on. Iranian women, Afghan women, are not lifeless forms of plastic to display the Islamic dress code in the clothing store window. These are women with great worth and dignity and value before our God. He hears their cries. He heard the cries of Mobina. He heard the cries of Romina. They're no longer here to go through this suffering. And he will, as the God of justice, avenge their deaths. I promise you, this is the God that I serve. And as we think about Iranian women this morning, I want us to go now to Afghanistan for the last few minutes of our program. I want to share with you just a very powerful article that my dear wife Becky just recently wrote for the Political Insider. She was given an opinion piece by the editor on the plight of Afghan women. And I want to share with you this powerful story. I want to read it to you because it's better than for me to summarize it. I want you to hear her words. The title of it is "The Long, Slow Death for Afghan Women Under Taliban Rule," subtitle, "Where Are the Feminists?" I want you to hear Becky as she takes a stand for Afghan women. When the United States first went into Afghanistan, we all remember the pictures of women. Really, the only way our Western eyes could tell that they were women were by the long blue burqas they wore walking down the street. In the 20 years that the Taliban were not in control of Afghanistan, things changed. Not a lot, but some. Women and girls were allowed to work, to go to school, to live their lives. But now, as we all know, all of that will change, and certainly not for the better. Veteran reporter and war correspondent Fox News' Laura Logan has spent years in Afghanistan and knows all too well the horrors of everyday life for women under the Taliban. She describes it, quote, as a long, slow death, unquote. Since the fall of the Afghan government and the rise to power once again of the Taliban, there have been many promises to respect women's rights, that they would be more permissive and give broader rights to women than prior to 2001. So we had these promises from a sort of kinder, gentler Taliban, really? But there is always that one stipulation within the bounds of Sharia law, right? It doesn't take a rocket scientist to know what that means ultimately for Afghan women. Logan describes it this way: it is a long, slow death. If you're unlucky, but if you're lucky, be slaughtered quickly, because that is what life is like for women under the Taliban, a long, slow death. So what will life be like for Afghan women now that they are once again at the mercy of the Taliban? Logan interviewed two female Afghan journalists. Now, of course, they have been barred from their newsroom and they're in hiding because they are afraid the Taliban is going to kill them. Another woman working as a midwife dreamed of being a doctor. Not now. Another woman's parents arranged a marriage for her at the age of 14 so she could move to Canada with her husband and escape the certain brutality of the Taliban. Logan believes, based on her extensive time in Afghanistan, that the Taliban will show a few token women in occupation, such as doctors, and will allow just enough women and just enough girls to go to school so that, well, the world will think that everything is all right. But it will not be, because as Logan goes on to say, the ideology of the Taliban will not allow for change for women. There will be a never-ending barrage of stories like these. You're going to hear them. The lives of Afghan women will consist of the possibility of becoming sex slaves and second-class citizens. They are stories that bring a hardened and seasoned reporter like Laura Logan literally to tears. She lamented, "It is the end of freedom. It is the end of possibility. It is the end of hope. It is the end of life. It is the end of light. It is the end of everything that is good in us." So your question is probably my question. Where are the feminists? Where are they to speak up, right? So after hearing these reports of how life will now be under the Taliban for women, we need to sort of ask, where are the feminists? Where are those champions of women in the Democratic Party? Where is Democrat Senator Maizi Hironau of Hawaii squawking at men to just shut up and stand up, do the right thing? Where's her voice? The answer is nowhere. None of them are anywhere to be found. If they were, they would have to answer probably tough questions about a president from their own party who has left the Afghan people in the lurch, and more specifically, women in the lurch. Here's a question for you. What might have happened if Donald Trump had perpetuated this nightmare on the female population of one country? Well, we know there would be a 24 hours news channel, probably CNN, covering all the gory details. Well, but you don't hear that now, do you? Feminists in the Democratic Party have way more important things to do, really, than addressing the plight of Afghan women. Well, they have a president to circle the wagons around. It is unclear what might be able to be done now that the U.S. has exited Afghanistan, but one thing is for certain. There's going to be a generation of women who will tell those coming behind them about a time when women had a taste of freedom, and they will have to imagine what it must be like. Thanks, Joe. This article is courtesy of my beautiful, intelligent wife, Becky, writing for Political Insider. There's no words. There are no feminists that are speaking up. But let me assure you, I don't care if there is, I will do it. And I believe that you listening, you too will do it because you care, because you care about the dignity and worth of human beings, and especially these women who are suffering. There is a God who cared, as I shared with you from Psalm 72. And we need to understand that in our greatest, darkest, deepest pit, that we are never alone. And I want you to hear from a band of many years ago who sings about the reality of never being alone. This is Barlow Girl on the Cross in the Desert. Let's listen.
I waited for you today. what you didn't show. No, 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 I needed you today.
Such a powerful song of truth from Barlow Girl. I cried out with no reply, and I can't feel you by my side, so I'll hold tight to what I know, and you're here, and I'm never alone. And though I cannot see you, and I can't explain why, such a deep, deep reassurance you've placed in my life. We cannot separate because you're part of me. And although you're invisible now, I'll trust the unseen. Words that have such great rings of truth. Never Alone really follows up with one I shared with us today as we were going through these stories. God says he will rescue the poor when they cry to him. He will help the oppressed who have no one to defend them. He feels pity for the weak and the needy. He will rescue them. He will redeem them from oppression and violence, for their lives are precious to him. Every day, in some way or another, those are the words from my lips in prayer from Psalm 72 to my about my Iranian friends to our great God and Savior. He is the God of justice. And you say, well, there's still so much evil and suffering in the world. There's a purpose in our sin-cursed world where God allows sinful choices of free will human beings, but in the end, he has the final say. He works all things together for the good of those that love him and are called according to his purposes. We cry out, and we know that our God hears our cries in every circumstance. He determines the outcome. He doesn't just work it out. He determines it. Understand something. He is sovereign in this evil world. He is in control of this evil world. Most of our news reports on that part of humanity using their free will to cause evil. Rarely do we hear the news report on the greater portion of humanity that use their choices for good. We do hear more of evil in the news than I think that there is in the world. There's evil, to be sure, and we report on it, and we cry out against it, to be sure. But where are the stories of the good that is done in the world? You don't hear enough of those. Because let's face it, the stories of suffering and evil, they're the ratings game for the media. And you know it, and I know it. I want us to share the stories of the goodness of God through humanity in our world. I want to hear more of those stories. And yes, I will continue to be a voice and report on the evil that's done. Of course I will. But I wish that the media would balance it out, because when you listen and watch for a day, you assume that there is nothing but evil in the world, and then it outweighs the good. But it's not true. It's not true. Our God is working. He is determining the outcome. He's working through all the details. He is the God of justice who is working this out. You might say, well, why doesn't all of the evil just go away? It's going away. On a determined day, God says he will wipe away all the tears from our eyes. There will be no more sorrow, pain, crying, or death. He promises us that. There is a purpose in the suffering. There is a beginning, and then there is an end to the suffering. And Jesus provides that escape from God's wrath and God's justice if we call out on his name. He is our Lord, and he is our Savior. I want to thank you so much for joining me today on Labor Day, on Monday, September 6, 2021. Please pray for the people of Iran. I will see you again on Thursday. Have yourself a great rest of the day and a great rest of the week.